Welcome to Culture Voice, an international perspective on the marketing of arts and culture, in partnership with the National Arts Marketing Project of the U.S. and the Arts Marketing Association of the U.K. And now, your hosts, Carol Jones and Ron Evans.
Welcome to Culture Voice. My name's Carol Jones, and I'm here with my co-host Ron Evans from the U.S. How's it with you today, Ron?
It's brilliant, as they say. Beautiful sunny day outside here in California. Yes, it's like I rolled out of bed into my swimming pool. But normally it's pretty overcast where I live, so it's nice to have a sunny fall day. How are things going over there in Cardiff?
Well, we're experiencing an Indian summer, so it's quite warm here. It's usually freezing at this time of year in Cardiff. So we're enjoying the sun as well. No swimming pool in my backyard, though, Ron. Anyway, in this episode, we're going to talk about Pokemon Go and augmented reality. Mm-hmm. And I think that you've chosen this topic, Ron, mainly to embarrass me in front of the US and UK.
Not in the slightest. But you have a lot of experience with Pokemon Go, and tell us a little bit about the game and how you got started and where you are today.
Well, it was your fault I got addicted to Pokemon Go. I'll just put that out there, Ron. And it started when we were up in Edinburgh at the Arts Marketing Association conference, and it was the day that it went live, and there you were, always ahead of the pack, catching Pokemon around Edinburgh. And I resisted it for a couple of days, I think, Ron, knowing that I've got propensity to get addicted to things like that. And then I started. And now I have to say, Ron, I am a level 24 trainer, soon to become level 25.
Wow. You have more stick to it than I do. But that is, now I'm actually personally curious about all the cool Pokemon I might be able to catch in the UK that I can't have here, right? And likewise, when you come out to NAMP in Austin, you can see what kind of Texas Pokemon you can capture. So what attracted you to it so much? And we're talking about this from a marketing perspective, I'm going to go in a little bit into the psychology of this becoming a worldwide instant, like, meme phenomena with everybody jumping on board. But remember back to Edinburgh, what attracted you to it first, Carol, and why was there a couple of days pause, and then why did you decide to first start getting involved with it?
Well, I think it was because my excuse was, Ron, and this was an excuse, was I wanted to see how it worked, how they were using augmented reality. Were they playing on the nostalgia of the original Game Boy experience? And how that could translate, I suppose, to a cultural organization, what we could learn from it, what we could do differently. That was my excuse. But, of course, I got drawn into it. One of the things I think, one of the reasons that I've got drawn into it is within us all, I think, is this, and I think it goes back to cavemen, is that need to collect things. And people, when they're talking about the psychology of loyalty, etc., and why we get drawn into things, very rarely talk about collecting. And yes, it's such a big thing, a part of what we do. I collect all sorts of things. My big collection is of snow globes, Ron. Another confession from me. I don't know if you collect anything.
Just compliments, I think. Wow, that was pretty good right off the top of my head. That there you go. I didn't know. I may have to connect you with some snow globes. I also seem to collect dog hair. That's another thing that seems to crop up quite a bit. But you're right. It's people collect all manner of things. And I remember somebody early on asking me about Pokemon Go and why somebody would want to be involved with it. And why would you want to collect these creatures? And for people, we're assuming that most of you know what Pokemon Go is. Just as a little bit of background, it's a game on smartphones connected to an animation series that's been around for many years. But there are creatures out in the world that you can see visually superimposed on top of things in the environment. So you turn your camera on and you see a little creature sitting on top of a rock in front of you. The rock is real, the creature is not. And your job is to throw out a ball at the creature and capture him inside the ball so that you can train that creature and later fight him against other creatures. And nobody seems to really die, they just fight and some people win and lose. But it's about this collection. And so these people, this person I was talking to said, why would you want to be involved with collecting these digital creatures? And I said, well, why do people collect Swizzle sticks or license plates from every state or whatever? At least this is hip because it's in your environment and it's got the whole cachet of the world's playing it right now. So it didn't surprise me that people wanted to collect things. It wasn't about what the things were, because, I mean, wouldn't you agree, Carol? You've probably heard some people collecting some weird stuff out there.
Well, yeah, and you've got to catch them all, Ron, you know, as the saying goes. Yes. But I think the augmented reality is a very small part of the game, of the gamification. And most people I know, because I'm now very networked in the Pokemon Go community, Ron, actually I've started a separate, I can't believe I'm confessing this, I've started a separate Twitter account with my Pokemon Go trainer handle, so I don't embarrass myself on my Monday.
So great.
But most people turn off the augmented reality, one, because it really drains your battery really, really quickly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as soon as you've seen a Pokemon, you know, on your sofa once, you know, that kind of excitement soon evaporates. So it's about a lot more than that, I think. And you and I have talked about the psychology of loyalty. And there's a great book called Loyalty 3.0 that looks at gamification. Mm-hmm. And written by somebody called Paharia. Is that the right pronunciation,
Paharia,
Ron?
Yeah.
And he's got those five kind of triggers to what motivates people intrinsically. Autonomy. You know, so the urge to control our lives. Well, there I can control my little world of Pokemon and collect them and battle with them. But also there's that mastery, which is also important. So I'm becoming a master of the game. I'm becoming, I'm heading up gyms and I'm leveling up. I did say I was level 24, didn't I, Ron? And then you've got things like purpose, and I think it fits there as well. So how am I making a difference playing Pokemon Go? Well, actually, I'm walking everywhere. It's quite extraordinary. I've walked hundreds and hundreds more kilometers than I would have if I wasn't playing. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of making a difference. So my effort is beginning to mean something. But also I'm finding out more about Cardiff particularly. So for instance, there's a Pokestop and they give little bits of information about the Pokestops. And there's one in Cardiff that is actually a very big statue of a lion, which is on the top of a 3 or 4 story building, which I must have walked past thousands of times and never actually seen. Mm. And this lion is there to protect the city of Cardiff. So I'm getting little kind of snippets of information as well.
Yeah. So Pokestop, for those not familiar, you have to go someplace where you can earn the little balls that you throw at the Pokemon. And a Pokestop is a place that is usually a place where crowds form around some sort of a landmark or a cultural institution or sometimes a cafe or something like that. And by interacting with the Pokestop, you get some of these balls to use for capturing Pokemon. And it refreshes every 7 minutes or so, I think. So you can interact with it again and get some more loot, as they say. But one of the biggest things that people are saying about the game is it is getting people off the couch, because there are Pokemon eggs that you need to hatch, and by hatching the eggs, the only way to do that is by walking a kilometer or 5 kilometers or something like that with the app open. So people want to know what the prize is going to be. So they've come up with a way of really changing behavior through gamified experience and trying to get people to be more active, not only more active physically in just one place, but more active mentally and intellectually in their community by learning about different things that are around there that they didn't know about and that you walk by every day. It's interesting you say that you walked by there thousands of times, Carol, and you never saw it. Kind of like we don't see the Pokemon, but they're there, and yes. We don't see the space, but it's there. And one is real and one is not. I think that's an interesting connection. I will admit I only got up to level 7. So you are doing much better than me. But I never tired of I knew I could turn off the air, but I always liked capturing the thing superimposed over, you know, wherever I was. So I never got tired of that. But just as fast as this phenomena, rose up into existence with everybody seemingly knowing about it, over like a 2-day period, everybody was talking about Pokemon Go. It was being released in different countries every day. The servers were filled. Millions of people signed up for it. There was this total rush. And then about 2 or 3 weeks later, there started to be a little crest of that. And suddenly it started to be not so popular. So was that experience yours as well, Carol? I know you've continued to be involved and it's connected you. I find that I'm playing it less. I do still pull it out sometimes if I know I'm in a place that has a lot of Pokestops and I'm keeping track of what they're doing with it. But what's your sense of the community around you and how people have continued or not continued to be involved with playing the game?
I still see when I'm out and about such a wide range of people playing, Ron. Families, people in their 60s, guys in suits. It's not just that target maybe demographic of the kind of geeky teenager who looks very white and is very pale and thin because he never leaves his house or his computer screen. It's a very wide kind of spread community, I think, which is interesting. I think some of the tech problems caused by the success did drive people away. And it is getting down now maybe more to the hardcore addicts, mm-hmm. which I count myself one. But I think there's possibly, you know, what can we learn from this as an arts marketer? You know, what are the key things that we can pull from this in terms of what can we apply? Is it about the augmented reality? Is it about those other kind of forces we were talking about, autonomy and mastery and purpose, etc.? How can we kind of root into those and ride off the back of this idea?
Well, I think a lot could be said of just riding the wave of popularity. Like, this thing took over faster than anything I've seen take over ever. I'm talking Ice Bucket Challenge. I'm talking any other viral meme or thought or something like that that just screamed through the interwebs, if you will. And it seemed like everybody was downloading it. And to some people who were resisting, resistance is futile, by the way, they did not want it to stop talking to me about Pokemon Go. Everybody's talking about it. It became overwhelming. It became super saturated. So I think there's certainly a conversation to have around tapping into that global or societal spark that happened over those few days. But I'd love to know, from your perspective, going to arts organizations over there, did you see any arts organizations try any marketing tactics or try to tap into Pokemon Go in any way?
I think some have, Ron, yes. So advertising the fact that, particularly if they're a Pokestop, to come there, catch Pokemon. And certainly my habits have changed. So I might have gone to a venue, a pub, a cafe before, and I've changed my habits to go to one where I know there's a Pokestop, so I can actually get some experience points and some goodies in my backpack. Mm-hmm. So it is changing how people, the things they do. And I think alongside lots of the other retail sector, arts organisations have jumped on that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Haven't seen a lot of it in the UK. I don't know about over in the States.
Yeah, when this hit, I had a couple of clients reach out to me immediately going, how do I get involved with this? What's the strategy that we can use for tapping into this rush that's happening right here? One of the Niantic, the company that makes Pokemon Go, started to build in some ways to commercialize the product. One of those ways is by putting out something called a lure. And you buy lures with real dollars, or you can earn them in the game. And a lure will attract super cool Pokemon to your location for 30 minutes time. Now, it's not just for you, though. The location exists for all other players that are in the world, real people in that pub or that cafe. So cafes started buying lures and throwing out lures and telling people, come to the cafe, hang out, catch Pokemon. While you're here, buy some coffee or a donut or a piece of pizza or whatever it's all about. And many cafes did some brisk business during that time with bringing people in. And this also worked for a theater company that I know. They were a Pokestop, and there was Pokestop right next door, and I think there was a gym right next door too. And so they started to come up with a campaign around parents and children, saying, parents, come and see this show, which is completely not children friendly. And children can hang out here with us. We're going to provide someone who can watch over them, and they can catch Pokemon in the lobby or in this room while you see the play, which I thought was a brilliant tactic. Way to involve, again, that's assuming that only kids want to play Pokemon and the parents wouldn't want to be out there playing Pokemon too, because they would, many of them would. But that was a rapid response to this wave of Pokemon that took over everything. And now some of those people, we've continued to have conversations about them, and they're reevaluating, but I give them a lot of credit for being able to think out of the box immediately on how could we tap into this force and make it so that people are more tapped into the arts. And I have seen a lot of arts organizations and cultural institutions tap into the fact that people are walking by, not knowing that they were ever there, similar to the lion that you mentioned, making information available, putting out signage, having a greeter there saying, oh, you're here catching, we've got some good ones here. Some people don't even know what the game's about, but they've got somebody there who says, you should know about the programs we have here. We do a lot of different things. So as a visibility and a first-time marketing tool like that, a lot of organizations have found a use for that. Have you run into anything like that over there yet?
Yeah, and I think the challenge is, of course, how long you engage with that kind of thing. And as the hype wears off, and as the backlash starts in a way of that so last month's, and I get a lot of scorn from particularly my son, who is of an age who is first generation Game Boy Pokemon. And of course, would have nothing to do with Pokemon Go, and looks at me with despair, Ron. I mean, there's real despair in his eyes. And I think, of course, all organizations need to be wary of how that fits with their brands and whether they do want to be associated with Pokemon Go or not.
Well, and it brings up this question of exposure and visibility being enough. So if you, for example, didn't know that this museum was there and Pokemon Go brings you to the doors of the museum, So now you have the knowledge that this museum exists. Is that enough for you to attend? By some percentage, probably it is. I don't know what that percentage is. We could certainly try to figure that out. But it's going to be interesting to see what the more long-term results of an organization having some sort of connection to Pokemon is going to be. Does that mean that people discovered, and if they marinated in the fact that this place existed and they've walked by there, does that mean that they get engaged? Or is it more of a flash in the pan and I'm going back to my old habits and ways that I behave on an everyday basis, and I'm not going to go to the museum, or I'm going to forget about the fact that it's there in the first place? It's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah. And also interesting to see if organizations really look in different ways at augmented reality and what they can do themselves in a different way. The museums in the UK have been really ahead of the game in terms of using augmented reality in interesting ways. Museum of London, Imperial War Museum. So using AR to on their phone to almost as a window, so they could see the past, and that augmented reality would be overlaid over the present. As you walked along parts of London, for instance, you could see it could suddenly become immersed in how that particular street was centuries ago. Mm. So there's been interesting usage, I think, of AR in the cultural sector.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so organizations who are out there were thinking, should I get involved with that? Maybe. I'm always hip to running experiments and seeing what you can learn that's different than what you've been doing so far. The crest has probably happened with Pokemon Go, and people will still be involved. It doesn't have that fire that it had for the first few days there, or maybe the first week or so, but it is still certainly something to look at. More of a look should probably be towards, how do I see this coming the next time? And is there anything that I can do or want to do to be involved with a global phenomenon like that? And that just comes from having your ear to the ground on social, hearing what people are talking about, watching what people are doing as they enter your space, and seeing if there's some way that you could tap into that. And if people are showing that they have an affinity for behaving in this way, they want to play Pokemon Go, anything you can do to help them achieve their goals, sounds kind of game-like, actually. Anything you can do to help them achieve their goals, that's going to be seen as a success by them and give them some positive feeling towards you. And so you might make a space where they can do that, whatever it is in the future. And while they're there, they're also exposed to the programs and services that you offer.
That sounds great, Ron. We've had a good chat about Pokemon Go, and about some aspects of what makes it so successful and some things that arts organizations can do. As always, we like to share tips and tricks or resources we've come across recently, or even old favorites. So, Ron, what would you like to share today?
One of my favorite parts of the podcast. I have a little bit of a different thing, not an arts marketing thing, but maybe a way to make arts marketers better at what they do by clearing some of their brain space. There is a website, an article called "This 2-Minute Video is a Basic Guide to Meditation." It is a lifehacker.com article that's linking to a larger article. It's Meditation 101, a Beginner's Guide, and it's a 2-minute video. And it talks about mindfulness and how you can get started with just a couple of minutes sitting back, opening your mind, focusing on the present. And it's a very forgiving way of teaching you what meditation is all about and some of the benefits that you can get from it. Because it says all you do is if you mess up, you start again. And this is really one of the cores of mindfulness, is acknowledging that you have crazy thoughts when you're trying not to have crazy thoughts, and simply starting over again with focusing on your breathing or something else that you're focusing on, and having that mental space to quiet your emotions, to quiet all the things that are frustrating you from that day, from the list that you're trying to put together of segmented patrons, and it's not working, and you just overwrote something, and somebody's yelling at you, and you have all these deadlines. 2 minutes of your time, a few minutes every day, spending focusing on your breathing and something quiet could have massive, massive benefits. The research is off the charts on what it does to people's emotional health and their ability to accomplish their goals successfully and have fun doing it. So Meditation 101, A Beginner's Guide, I'll put it in the show notes, and you can certainly search for on Google or your search engine of choice. Quote, this 2-minute video is a basic guide to meditation. So I hope that helps everybody, and love to hear the feedback from folks when I meet folks.
I love the idea of if you mess up, start again. Simple, mm-hmm. but that applies to so much of everything we do, whether it's in marketing or not, Ron. Mm-hmm. Well, my resource today is something called CrowdSize. It's an app. And it's for any of you out there who want to estimate the size of a crowd. So particularly if you've got outdoor events, that might be something that's important for you to do. And it's actually very difficult, especially if there are no defined entrance and exit points, if it's not a ticketed event, then actually estimating the size of the crowd, as I'm sure Donald Trump will tell you, can be quite difficult. What CrowdSize does, and why I love it, and why I'm recommending it, is it makes it really easy. It works with Apple Maps, and you can draw the perimeter of your crowd. There's a little density slider where you can put in the density of the crowd. So if you've got photographs, or if you've done some Jacob's method, density per square meter numbers, you can add those in and get the crowd size. It's really neat, it's really simple, and it works really well.
That sounds fabulous. Does it do some sort of sensing of pixels of movement of faces or something, or how does it look at that?
No, you need to put in the density yourself. So you still need some kind of record of how dense that crowd is. So is it light density? Is it medium? Is it like a mosh pit? Mm-hmm. And it is worth having a look at Jacob's method. If people aren't familiar with that, just Google Jacob's method crowd size, it'll come up. And he gives some indication of the meters that you need to measure out, and how many people in that square meter means that it's dense or medium or light. So do that. Use your photographs that you've got as well. Use as many resources as you've got, and it'll come up with quite an accurate crowd size for you.
That sounds really useful for festivals or screenings or things like that outside. I'm going to play with that. That sounds really cool.
Well, Ron, that's been great. I've enjoyed talking to you about my obsession of Pokemon Go. Thank you so much to my co-host, Ron Evans, and thank you for listening. We look forward to bringing you future discussions on the marketing of arts and culture. It's been a great podcast. What do you think, Ron?
Fantastic, everybody. Be safe out there. Keep learning and don't give up. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Culture Voice. If you like this episode, subscribe and stay connected to the latest conversations on the marketing of arts and culture.